Well, once again, everybody, thank you for joining us here on this Friday, August 19th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so as we talk a lot of pigskin, plenty of gridiron analysis coming your way here on this Friday edition to wrap up this week of Bang the Book Radio. I'll be joined in a couple seconds by Cole Ryan. We're going to chat NFL preseason, also talk about the AFC South and the NFC North. We'll take some deep dives into those two divisions, which are two of the more compelling divisions in the NFL for a variety of different reasons. Second half of today's show, Aaron Saunders of BangTheBook.com, also of NumberFire.com, joins us. We'll talk some more Big 12 college football. His Big 12 college football season win total best bets piece went up this morning over at BangTheBook.com. So plenty of things to discuss there with that conference. Of course, a very interesting offseason for some of those teams. We'll go ahead and get to today's first guest. That is Mr. Cole Ryan. Cole, how's it going today, sir?
Excellent, as always, my friend. The Fridays are beginning to feel a lot more like our normal football Fridays, and so for that alone, I'm pumped up.
Absolutely, me too. And for those that are regular listeners of Bang the Book Radio, or maybe those that are just joining us here for football season, we'll have Cole on the broadcast twice a week here on Wednesdays and Fridays. We'll have to pre-record both of those segments, unfortunately, but we'll have our Gridiron Gambling Report segment on Wednesdays and then our Super Contest segment on Fridays. Of course, we're hoping for better fortunes here in the Super Contest for the upcoming season. But Cole, you know, you and I were emailing back and forth a little bit here, and I want to get some thoughts on those six preseason games that were played last night. And I was talking a little bit about the Cleveland Browns, who looked stunningly competent offensively. RG3 looked pretty good in the pocket. Terrell Pryor out there burning DBs. You got, of course, Corey Coleman, who's going to be a factor this season. Josh Gordon, once he's reinstated. Gary Barnage. I'm not saying that the Browns are going to go out here and win six or seven games or anything like that, because I still think this is a severely flawed team. But you look for some things in the preseason. You look for some tendencies. And if the first team offense is going to be better, maybe this is a team you look to bet some overs with.
Yeah, you're right. You hit me up about this last night, and we talked about it. And I love the NFL preseason for a multitude of reasons. And you have to be careful on what you take into account as being, you know, a game breaker as far as being really good for the season, or maybe just something that you could misread at times. To me, I think you're right with this offense. I think it'll be better. I like Hugh Jackson. He loves to run the ball. To me, that always sets up a good quarterback play. RG3, obviously, he has confidence in him, which is the first time anybody's had confidence in RG3 since year one, probably. And now he's setting up the offense to succeed, and they're going to get key players back. I think this offense is on pace. Hugh Jackson, like you said, he likes to rush the ball. The last four Hugh Jackson coach teams have finished top five in rushing touchdowns. So to me, if you can set up that run, it's going to open up the pass. More importantly, it's going to keep RG3 healthy. I think that's huge. So that is one of the things that you brought to my attention right away. I was watching a few of the other games. What really has caught my attention so far in preseason, NFL underdogs. 5-1 against the spread last night, 16-6 against the spread overall. Me being mostly a contrarian better, that's good news.
Well, and of course, when you think about it, a lot of times the road teams here in the preseason are going to be the underdogs. So, you know, home field advantage clearly means absolutely nothing in the preseason. We kind of knew that already. Right. It is something I alluded to earlier in the week with Brad Powers, in that as you get deeper into the preseason, maybe there's a little bit of a home field advantage in the sense that, you know, coaches and front offices sort of want to put their best foot forward in front of the home fans and have a good performance there in week three or week four to maybe generate a little bit of interest, a little bit of momentum. But in looking at what happened last night, you know, I talked with Joe Everett in the middle of the week about Cincinnati and Minnesota in the preseason, both of them outright underdog winners as the road teams. We talked about Pittsburgh on last week's segment. They get blanked by Philadelphia as a 2.5-point home favorite. So, you know, even though you don't want to expose yourself too much during the preseason, a lot of the things that we've talked about have been coming through here. You know, you talk about coaches to back, you talk about deeper rosters, you talk about teams that want to, you know, set a precedent here in the preseason, particularly those with new coaches. So a lot of things going our way here so far in the preseason. And, you know, that could turn on a dime, and obviously it could, you know, over the next several games here this weekend, not really matter a whole lot. But if you do that research, if you do that study, you can find some of these things out and have a profitable preseason.
Well, to me, you got to stay on top of things. And again, we always pride ourselves in giving out information. And a few things that we've talked about even early and our segments have come to fruition. Like, you know, Peterson's a new coach for the Eagles. The Eagles are playing well. I mean, nobody, at least I don't think outside of Philadelphia, is going to say that Pittsburgh is a worse team than Philadelphia, but it sure looked that way last night. Plus, you got to look at the depth. You got to look at who's playing, because Landry Jones, 4 interceptions last night. Obviously, he's not going to be a starting quarterback. That's Big Ben. But you got to find out who's playing, who's not. Tom Brady was supposed to play for the Patriots last night. He was supposed to start for the Patriots. He didn't. Plus, other things happened, like backdoor covers, because there are teams late that are deeper that are still trying to figure out positions. There's offensive line battles. There's running back battles. And, you know, a lot of this stuff is not just coach speak. It's the coach telling these players they got to go out and they got to play hard every week, or they're going to have a chance to lose their job. So these are the things that if you're in tune to, you can find the edge. You and I have said it a million times. We're not going to put out a huge bankroll for preseason football, but there are definitely angles to be found.
Well, and are there any angles to be found here on Friday night, you think? Do you see anything that really stands out to you here?
You know, there's always something that will catch my attention, but for me, it's really just a matter of absorbing all this stuff. And what I mean by that is, there are lines that pop out to me. The Chargers being a, you know, 1-point chalk against Arizona, that stands out to me as something where, of course, if this was a regular season, that, you know, San Diego would probably be 7-point underdogs. So that those kind of things stand out to me. But from personnel standpoint, you want to see if Dak Prescott is a backup for the Cowboys can still do the job he did the first time he was out. And the Redskins, can they run the ball? They didn't run the ball very well in the first week, and now they're going up against one of the better run defenses in the NFL, even if it's a preseason game. So you want to see if they want to establish the run, at least in this outing.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, you do look for those tendencies. And, again, a lot of times coaches will tell you those things. They'll say, you know, as you talked about last week, you know, we haven't run the ball a whole lot in training camp. We're going to do it under game conditions here. And coaches will tell you these things. I mean, you know, you really don't have a whole lot of surprises in the preseason. As I talked about, you know, with various guests and talked about with you last week, there's always variance and volatility in the second half of these games because you just don't know what some of these practice squad types are going to do. But, you know, the coaches are going to tell you more often than not who's going to play for how long, what the intentions are of this game, what these teams want to do, and you know, you can certainly play on that and look to, you know, make some decent money. Anything that you're looking for on Saturday? We got a bigger card of games, 7 preseason contests on Saturday. Anything really stand out to you there in that slate?
No, there are some angles I want to look for, but there's nothing that right now, at least, that I would say I want to bet on. You know, the Texans, I like to watch them because I really, and I know we'll talk about them here in a second, I really want to see Brock Osweiler do more. Kaepernick, whether he's going to play or not, rumors are that he's not going to play. Everything I've read said he's not going to play in this game. They may hold him off. So what's that quarterback battle like? And the same with the Rams. You know, I want to see their direction, their improvement as a team. Andrew Luck, he's going to finally see some action with the Colts. I really think they're a thin team too. So a lot of, I guess, side stories that will catch my attention for all the games that are on this weekend. But from a betting standpoint, there's not a game out there where I'm like, that's one I want to bet on. That's one I'm going to step out on. It's really just a matter of watching these side stories and the players and how they develop.
There is one game I want to focus on for Saturday because we've seen kind of an interesting line move with it where the Rams opened a 3-point home favorite against Kansas City, and the Rams got steamed in a big way last week when they were having their first home game. It was actually, you know, a really big crowd for that first home game back in L.A. They stormed back, win the second half 21-0 to win 28-24. Those that got in early cashed on the Rams. Those that played the line value late on the Cowboys got that one. So it was a pretty big middle there. But the Rams were down 24-7 at halftime in this game. Their first and second teamers did not play well at all. So here you've got Kansas City getting basically all the money this week. Some shops are still holding tight at 3 with extra juice. 5 dimes and BetOnline have gone all the way down to pick 'em on this game. The Greek sitting below the key number of 3 at 2.5. Really interesting. And, you know, we talk about not reading too much into what you last saw, not wanting to have too much recency bias, but it's pretty clear to me that the early week sharper bettors were not impressed at all with the Rams last week.
No. And you know what? You have to wonder about this team. They got a lot going on. They're going to L.A. They got Hard Knocks going on. You know, Jared Goff wasn't seeing a lot of first-team reps, which, of course, it's all but assumed he's going to be the leader of this team. It's just a matter of when. Jeff Fisher, the contract extension, so there's a lot of outside distractions going on with this team. If there's one thing that I found on this team that I do like for this week is that teams that usually don't do well from a first-team perspective in week one tend to rebound in week two of the preseason. For example, I saw last night with the Chicago Bears. They looked awful in their first game out. They were blanked by the Denver Broncos. They really had no output from their first team. So for them last night, it really wasn't a matter of winning. It was a matter of getting their first team on a page where they've got some success to build on. So one of the angles that I look for when I do bet on preseason games is the first, and definitely the first team, but first and even second teams that struggled out the gate, haven't done very well. The head coaches want them to do better so they can build on it. So they usually have a better outing the second time around.
That definitely makes a lot of sense. Maybe there's a chance for some value there on a Rams first half play. But again, like you talked about, you know, with Hard Knocks there, I mean, there are a ton of distractions. Also, new, you know, playing in a new city, getting acclimated to a new fan base, time difference, all kinds of stuff like that. There's a lot of things going on with the Los Angeles Rams right now. And we'll see if any of that stuff carries over to the regular season. But let's take a look here at some regular season type stuff. I'm going to start with the NFC North here because, you know, this is a division we talked about a little bit last week. You talked about the Chicago Bears being a team that you think, you know, could carry some value going into the season. So I think the Bears are a pretty good place to start. A relatively quiet offseason. Matt Forte leaves. Danny Trevathan comes in. So some impact additions and losses on both sides of the ball here. But I think the big thing that you like about Chicago is that this is the second year for them under this head coach, John Fox.
Right. And, you know, we loved it when they hired Fox and everybody brought along with them. I still think it's a good thing. They do lose some players, as you mentioned. Forte is gone. Martell Spence is gone. Truth be told, even with Adam Gase, I don't think those departures are really going to hurt the Bears. They're still under the same offense. Zach Miller is going to take over Martellus Bennett. At the end of the year, he had 18 passes in his final three games. So he already has that chemistry with Cutler. So they re-signed him. That was a no-brainer. Alshon Jeffrey's healthy. They get back Kevin White, who will finally play after being hurt. Langford, to me, is basically a younger version of Forte. He's starting to look better and better. He looked great last night against the Patriots. Cutler, he's definitely inconsistent. I really like to think a lot of that has to do with the offensive line that struggles. But one thing that I noticed is that Cutler, very good under pressure, finished with a league-leading 12 touchdowns and adjusted completion percentage of 69.5 against pressure last year. So to me, with John Fox, Ryan Pace going out and adding some guys on defense, you mentioned Danny Trevathan, Akeem Hicks, they got Jonathan Bullard, Gerald Freeman, Leonard Floyd in the draft. They got better on defense, and that's really what the Bears needed. I picked them to win this division, but I definitely think they have a chance at upsetting a few people, teams in this league, and maybe even an outside shot at the wild card. But the coaching is what I like, and that really leads this team.
You know, Adam Gase is a loss, and certainly he's been kind of a hot shot up-and-comer here for a while. But Dowell Loggins, who's now the offensive coordinator there, he was the quarterback's coach for a year for the Browns in 2014, excuse me. This is a guy that was an offensive coordinator at the age of 33 years old for the Tennessee Titans in 2013. He was only 35. So he's been a rapid riser here in terms of his coaching career as well. I think he's got some pieces to work with here. Alshon Jeffrey has reportedly looked outstanding in the preseason. And if Alshon Jeffrey is healthy, that guy's a game changer in a lot of different ways. Vic Fangio, second year with this defense, you have to figure they're going to improve a little bit. So I definitely think that Chicago, you know, is a team on the rise, but a big part of the problem here, and this is what makes the NFC North so compelling, you've got Minnesota, who could very well win this division, Green Bay, who could very well win this division, and then you've got a Detroit Lions team that's pretty talented. I mean, they've had some free agent losses here over the last couple of years, but apparently Matt Stafford and Marvin Jones already have a very good rapport. This offense was so much better when Jim Bob Cooter was elevated to the offensive coordinator. The Lions are a really compelling team for a lot of different reasons this year as well.
Yeah, I don't – so far, again, I won't bust open preseason as a given for a year, especially with a team like the Lions. But the offensive line doesn't make holes for the running game as much as I would like. They're a little better in pass protection, but you're right. It all comes down to Matthew Stafford. To me, like you said, since Jim Bob Cooter took over, he's looked very comfortable. Talked about it last last year, how well he's done. From weeks 10 to 17, he ranked first in completions, second in completion percentage, and had more than 310 passing yards or multiple touchdown passes in all seven of those games. So he definitely likes his offense. He was tied for third in touchdown passes. I mean, he goes on and on and on. Last night, his first drive, he was 8 of 11, 113 yards. Look for, to me, a big dose of no huddle from Detroit on offense this year. Still not sold on that defense at all. I do think Marvin Jones will be great in this offense. I think the offense as a whole will be good. To me, if I'm looking to bet on Lions games, like we talked about with the Browns, I'm looking to bet on the total or to go over in a lot of the games they play because this defense doesn't match up with his offense, and the offense is going to go no huddle for the most part, which is going to put even more of a strain on that defense. So I don't think the Lions are going to come close to winning this division. In fact, I think they'll finish in the bottom. But I do think you can get some value betting the total when they take the field.
You know, I think what's really weird about the NFC North, and there are probably other divisions like this as well, is that you've got Minnesota and Green Bay, who are remarkably consistent teams now. I mean, under Mike Zimmer, Minnesota's been very, very good. You've got the third year of Teddy Bridgewater. You have to figure he's going to keep improving. Adrian Peterson, there's still a little bit of mileage left on those tires. You know, of course, the Vikings are ferocious defensively. Green Bay, you've got Aaron Rodgers, a calming influence, a guy that when he's healthy, that's a fantastic football team. They've got some good guys defensively. The thing with Chicago and Detroit is they have individual pieces and parts. They've got guys that get you really excited, like a Marvin Jones, like an Alshon Jeffrey, you know, capable quarterbacks, young up-and-coming offensive coordinators. They just don't have the same consistency as the top two teams in this division. And that's what makes them difficult handicaps from a spread standpoint and also a difficult handicap from a season win total standpoint because, yeah, there's talent here. But would it surprise you if the Bears or the Lions, you know, went 5-11 or, you know, at best 6-10? Wouldn't surprise me at all. So you have to wonder how high the ceiling actually is for both of those teams.
Well, and that's the problem. We talked about this when you and I were trying to pick divisions that we wanted to cover or what order we wanted to cover them in. If you put these teams in different divisions, we may have different outcomes for their seasons because, to me, this division is just that good, and there are going to be spot plays for these teams, maybe at home in a divisional game or in a primetime spot, but it's going to be tough, and it's going to be tough. These are the kind of teams to me where you almost have to give them a little bit of rope for the first couple of games of the season to see exactly what they're bringing to the table, because right now with the Bears, I see an improved defense and a steady and consistent offense, all, of course, revolving around Cutler. That's really not new except for a better defense. The Detroit Lions, on the other hand, I see a horrible defense with a very, I'll say better than average offense. I don't want to say very good because I'm not going to go crazy with the Lions. But the problem is they're playing against Minnesota, who to me is going to be a good team again this year. And again, you brought up consistency. The Packers are going to be good again this year. So there's really nowhere for them to go unless all the other divisions falter and all the teams in this division does well, which just isn't going to happen.
Well, let's go to the Green Bay Packers here, who had a very, very quiet offseason. They're off to a good start here in the preseason, 2-0, bringing Mike McCarthy's preseason record to 22-19. For Green Bay, a tale of two seasons last year. They started 6-0, then they went 4-6 the rest of the way, made the playoffs, had to play in the wild card game because they lost the AFC North or the NFC North to Minnesota. They go on the road, beat Washington, go out on the road, lose to Arizona, although they did outgain the Cardinals in that overtime thriller. So for Green Bay here, you know, I mean, I just talked about their consistency, and I kind of raved about that, but they were lacking that element a little bit last year. Lost at home to Detroit, lost at home to Chicago. Those are two things that absolutely cannot happen when you need 11 or 12 wins to win this division. So for Green Bay this year, you know, it seems like they were content to go with what they had in-house. Do you feel like that was a good move for them?
No, I know. This is to be blunt about it, at least not on defense. The offense, look, when I look back at last year, you said it, the Packers are consistent, so everybody expects more from the Packers. I think they played above where they should have been last year by even making the playoffs because they were that banged up. Everybody knows about Jordan Nelson. Jordy Nelson, he's back and healthy and ready to go. Eddie Lacy, he was fat last year. He's in better shape, had a huge run last night. To me, of course, I'm going to dig in the trenches. They were not healthy last year. That hurt. They talk about Aaron Rodgers, his struggle. He finished last year with his worst 16-game season for completion percentage, passing yards, and passer rating. because he had a lot of things he had to do under pressure. He did throw an impressive 64 passes that traveled more than 20 yards in the air, all without one interception. So he's still Aaron Rodgers. He's actually in great shape as well. But to me, revolves around this offensive line, the best in the league. They have the same starting five for the straight year. But what I think is really important, went out and they drafted Jason Spriggs. They drafted Kyle Murphy. So now if there are injuries on that offensive line, they're going to have a little more depth, where last year they didn't. They had to rotate players in and out. It was tough to be consistent with run blocking and pass blocking. With that fixed, and again, the health back, Packers are going to be where they should be. The problem is, to me, the defense. I'm not even sold on anywhere up front. The secondary is decent, but they're getting old. They're moving Clay Matthews back to the outside. That's where he plays better, no doubt about it. But overall, this is just an old defense, and they're really just going to have to keep up. I don't know if they can do that.
Well, the Minnesota Vikings here, I think that a lot of people are going to put the Vikings at the top of this division when they make their preseason prognostications for the NFC North, and with good reason. I mean, Minnesota, under Mike Zimmer, they've been fantastic. They've shown improvement in each of his two seasons. Teddy Bridgewater has shown improvement. You know, only a 14-9 touchdown interception ratio last year, but completed over 65% of his passes, threw for over 3,200 yards, and they made some significant additions in the trenches. We talk a ton about the trenches here. You have to consider it in handicapping. Andre Smith, Alex Boone, two very good veteran moves for this team. Plenty of help up front for Adrian Peterson. The Vikings are the class of the NFC North to me.
Oh, no doubt about it. Look, the Vikings scored more than 21 points just 9 times in 18 games last year. So Adrian Peterson, he ran the ball, led the league in rush, and we know all about that, 1,400 yards, 11 touchdowns. But Teddy Bridgewater, surprisingly, was good. And I don't mean just good because he was young, but good because he had no protection. He was pressured on 46.9% of his dropbacks. And guess what? He led the league in completion percentage. That's with Mike Wallace, Stephon Diggs, leading wide receivers. Now, like you mentioned, they beefed up front. They got him another wide receiver in the draft. I think if he has more time to throw, this is going to be a much different offense, because he showed under pressure he could still complete the great passes. The schedule's pretty good. Two of his first three games against the Packers and the Panthers, that's trouble, no doubt about it. However, after that, he's favored at every game the rest of the year except for when they play at Green Bay in Week 16. To me, it sets up for a good year. Like you, I'm a big fan of Zimmer. I'm a big fan of what he did with this defense. I think it's truly one of the best defenses in the NFL, and I bet you if you ask 9 out of 10 NFL fans, they probably can't name more than one or two players on this defensive side. That's how good they are, because they're good as a team, not as an individual player.
Let me ask you this. I don't know if I'm going out on a thin limb or a thick limb here, so I'll let you kind of decide that.
Sure.
In your mind, are the Minnesota Vikings the best team in the NFC this year?
No, but they're there. They're in the conversation. They're in the conversation. If I had to pick one that would probably be the best, I would probably lean towards the Arizona Cardinals. But it's really only because they have more experience. So, to me, Bridgewater just doesn't have the experience Carson Palmer does. But at the same time, he doesn't have the injury concerns, or at least in my eyes, he doesn't. So, but if you're going to ask me to put them in the top two or three, definitely. I think they're that good.
We'll go over to the AFC South here, which appears to be a two-team race, but the teams in the bottom of this division are improving. We'll get to them in a second. But I want to start with the Houston Texans here. Houston Texans, of course, you know, making the playoffs last season, really, really good defensive team. Romeo Crennel has done a fantastic job as a defensive coordinator here. Got to give Rick Smith some credit for bringing in some very solid players on the defensive side. This is a team that, if they had a quarterback the last 2 years, we could be talking about some really different outcomes. This year, they put a lot of eggs into Brock Osweiler's basket. Is that a move that could elevate the Texans, or do you feel like, you know, this is a guy who, he's never been really a starting quarterback at the NFL level. Is this a major concern for them?
Well, that's the problem, right? It's a big if. Everybody thought it was a big splash in the free agency market, and I guess it could be. I mean, Brock Osweiler has 642 snaps. So you can't even go out and say that he's proven yet. Even in the games that he played, there was nothing spectacular about him. Now, the good thing about the Texans is they did, to me, the biggest pickup they had, Lamar Miller. I think he's incredible. I think he's going to be an upgrade. He can catch. He's a three-down guy. He can run all the time. He's done very well with limited attempts. He was miscoached in Miami. against a, or behind a worse offensive line. Now he's going to get a chance to run behind an offensive line that was upgraded. They lost center Ben Jones and right guard Brandon Brooks, but they brought in Nick Martin and Jeff Allen. I think this offensive line is going to be better. I think Lamar Miller is going to have a fantastic season. Like I talked about with the Cleveland Browns, if you can run the ball, it will make the quarterback look better. But it's a big if, because what if Brock Osweiler comes out and plays like Hoyer? Then all of a sudden we have the exact same team we had last year, a team that's maybe good enough to get in the playoffs but not go much deeper. So you have to be careful, because right now you're looking at a team with an unproven quarterback, a decent defense, somebody can help out J.J. Watt, which means they need Clowney to stand up. Special teams, third year in a row, the Texans were outgained on both kickoff and punt returns. So I'm very, very leery to jump on the Texans bandwagon just yet.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the status of J.J. Watt is really, really big for the Texans, obviously. I mean, this guy's an MVP caliber player, and it's not all about the production that he has with the pick sixes and how he's a red zone option inside the five offensively and all this type of stuff. It's also what J.J. Watt does in the mindset of the opposition, because they have to deviate from their game plan. There are some plays in the playbook that maybe they can't fully use. So that's a really big key for the Texans. Like you said, I mean, this is kind of a make or break year for Clowney. It's time for him to step up and do something. If he can stay healthy, you know, maybe he'll be able to do that. But the Texans, you know, they're very fortunate to be in the AFC South, because I think in terms of projected division winners, there's nobody that comes close to the number of question marks that Houston has.
Yeah, and I really think that's going to be an issue, because, look, I love their secondary. I think their secondary is improved. I think it's good to go. But as you mentioned, J.J. Watt can alter a game plan. So if I'm a, you know, an offensive coordinator going up against him, I don't care if I'm a double triple team if they have nobody else helping. You know, then I can go single coverage on everybody else on the, inside the box, basically. So that's where they need someone to stand up. Obviously, Clowney's the guy everybody's going to be looking for. And if he does that, that'll be great. But to me, Brock Osweiler, question mark on offense. Anybody trying to help J.J. Watt up front, question mark on defense, leaves me a big question mark for the Texans overall.
Well, speaking of question marks, the Indianapolis Colts, we've talked about this a little bit. Reports on Andrew Luck from training camp have not been glaring at all whatsoever. And, of course, this is a guy that has had some injury issues over the last couple of seasons. You've got, you know, Chuck Pagano, who's a great head coach, a tremendous motivator, but last year there wasn't a whole lot he could do. Injuries certainly played a huge role in what happened to the Colts last year. I mean, when Andrew Luck only starts seven games, it's going to be very difficult for you. But even then, when Andrew Luck was out there, the Colts were 2-5 in games that he started. He had a 15-12 touchdown to interception ratio. A lot of people would probably pick the Colts to finish second. There'd be some people that would pick the Colts to finish first. Would it surprise you in the slightest if this team finishes third or last in this division?
Not only will it surprise me, but that's my pick. Remember, I beat up at the four. I beat up on the 49ers in the past, and this year my team to beat the Colts. I get it, Andrew Luck. He's ready to get back in game action. He's even got some good wide receivers. I think Frank Gore is a guy that's very underrated, but their defense is awful. 25.5 points per game. They lost week 14 against Jacksonville, where they gave up 51 points. And what they do in the offseason, upgrade their unit, basically nothing. And they lost Gerald Freeman to the Bears. So they got some bad issues on defense. I don't know if they'll be able to overcome. And if they do, it'll have to be because Andrew Luck will have to be in MVP form. Something you can't say he's going to be. Plus, this team is thin. I've talked about that. They have no depth. So any injuries, which is going to happen in the NFL, is going to hurt this team. Here's the good news for the Colts. Five of the first seven games, Lions, Chargers, Jaguars, Bears, and Titans. So you will see what kind of team they will be early, because if they don't come out of that stretch with a very good record, there's going to be problems. I would prefer if they did, because if they can get a few wins against those teams, they're going to be overvalued. They're going to be overvalued against the spread. And at that point, you're probably going to get value on other teams to win this division, and that's what I'll be looking for.
You know, perception is going to be really, really interesting to watch on this team throughout the year. And for those playing our, you know, our NFL segment drinking game, I hope that you're drinking early here on this Friday. But the same thing here is that, you know, they play these winnable games. They also go to Denver, to Jacksonville, which is a game where, you know, we'll find out a lot about what Jacksonville has in store for this season. They've got to play Kansas City. They're at Green Bay. So, you know, things are definitely going to be very interesting for the Colts at the outset. I mean, would it surprise me if they, you know, hit the bye week at 3-6, 3-7? Absolutely not. at 3-6, I guess it would be because their bye week is week 10. Would they be, you know, a 4-5 type of team? Maybe 5-4, possibly 6-3. I don't think so. So I feel like the Colts are going to be a really difficult team on a week by week basis to bet on this year, because Andrew Luck may go out there, go 48 of 69 for 455 yards and 5 touchdowns and win you a game. But there's also going to be weeks where he'll be running for his life again, and the Colts may score 7 or 10 points. So very Jekyll and Hyde team this year. And I think that, you know, that's something that makes this division really interesting, is that you've got the top two teams really, really flawed, and that opens the door for a young up-and-comer like the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Sure, look. And again, perception of the Colts, and that's for my, you know, the day drinkers that always listen to our segment. But we'll be Andrew Luck. Luck is back, and they're ready to go. But look, the door is open for the Jaguars. Blake Bortles, I really want to see what he's doing, because he had a breakout, we'll call it, the year last year. But he threw the most interceptions in the league and took the most sacks. That's young to me. So if he can grow from that, he also threw more deep balls than any other quarterback in 2015, 97 of them. I like the fact that they add Chris Ivory. He's one of the most underrated players in the league to me. Third best breakaway percentage, fifth best elusive rating, third best pass blocking, which goes usually very under the radar when you look at a running back. Now he's going to team up with the elder. I think this offense is good. They have to do better on defense. Their pass rush, very weak. Pressure on only 26.5% of passing plays, that's last in the NFL. And they have to win on the road. Underdog, 34 straight road games, 40 and 30 straight up during that streak. So something they have. If they can win on the road, sky's the limit. If they can win on the road, this division is wide open for this team.
I think from a talent standpoint, Jacksonville is easily the team I'm most excited about here in the AFC South. Now, like you said, experience is a big thing. Learning how to win is a big thing. I know it sounds cliche and it's not necessarily a quantifiable type of thing, but you have to learn how to put games away. That's going to be something that Jacksonville is going to have to figure out here. I love what they did defensively. Malik Jackson is a huge addition. Prince Amukamara is a guy that adds depth to the secondary. Same thing with Tashaun Gibson. You know, they've done everything that they needed to do. They've drafted very well. They get Dante Fowler back this year, which, you know, he should be an impact player, defensive end. I love so many things about this Jacksonville team. At the same time, when you've been a franchise with a history of losing, or a history of, you know, losing badly, there are some, you know, perception biases that need to be overcome. So as much as I like the upside of this team, as much as I love, again, individual pieces and parts, I want to see that cohesion. I want to see Bortles get better and take care of the football. And again, like you said, they've got to win some games on the road if they want to really be a contender in this division.
Well, and to me, that's the best part. That's why I highlighted the Colts' early schedule. I hope that the Colts come out and do well in the first half of that schedule. I'm just talking about first three or four games, because then the money will come on them. Usually I will bet on a division winner before the season starts and then try to hedge it along the way or whatever. In this situation, I actually want to wait, because I want the Colts to come out and do well, because then I think there will be value in plenty of teams, especially the Jaguars. They're getting a lot of love in the win totals. And I'll be honest with you, I think the Titans are going to be a much better team this year as well, because to me, they're headed in a positive direction. I like the fact that they traded Doyle Green Beckham. I think it sent a message, but really on offense, they want to make Mariota better. He was excellent at small throws, intermediate throws, 10 to 19 yards. He completed 70 of 100 attempts, about 1,200 yards and a touchdown, no picks, but he couldn't throw the ball deep. Just 9 of his 49 deep balls, 293 yards, 3 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. So what do? They shorten the field for him. They get DeMarco Murray, Derrick Henry. They're already talking about it. They're already glorifying that they're going to run the ball and make it a smash-mouth kind of team, which is good. It's going to make him more comfortable. Again, the problem with this team is let that defense be better. 26.4 points per game in 2015, including a stretch of 5 consecutive games in which they allowed 30-plus points to close out the year. Might want to attribute that to them kind of giving up a little bit, not playing as hard since they knew the season was over. But this team is going to be more improved, too. So you get the Titans more improved, you get the Jaguars more improved, I think the Colts are going to be in the dumper. That equals a wide-open division.
The thing I don't like about the Titans, I feel like they had a really uninspired offseason. I didn't like that they decided to keep Mike Mularkey around. I mean, you know, maybe there are some behind-the-scenes things that he brings to the table that obviously I'm not going to see. They moved Jason Michael from offensive coordinator to the quarterback's coach, so maybe they like what he did, you know, with Marcus Mariota in practice and all those types of things. I think Dick LeBeau is a very good move for this defense, because Dick LeBeau is an experienced guy. bring some legitimacy here to that side of the ball. But overall, I thought it was a really uninspired offseason for the Titans from a coaching standpoint. I'm not all that excited about the moves that they made. Rishard Matthews is a guy that's going to help Mariota out. Zeke is sort of cut from that Oregon offense type of mold. He had a lot of success at Nevada, could do a lot of different things. He returns punts, can return kicks, play slot, play outside. That's a good weapon for them. But, you know, overall for Tennessee, I feel like they're in this position where they're just sort of hoping to develop from within. And I feel like they're in a situation where they needed to help out some of those younger guys with a more inspired coaching hire and maybe some different veteran players.
You're right. I'll be honest with you. Overwhelmed is a good word. Problem is, they're Tennessee Titans. They had 3 wins last year. So unless they're going to break the bank, it's going to be hard to bring anybody in. So to me, finding guys like DeMarco Murray, who's not only a veteran, but he's inspired to put up a good season after a horrendous stop in Philly. And then you bring in guys, again, I'm going to go in the trenches, of course, center Ben Jones. We're going to start beefing up that inline. You're going to use your draft picks on offensive linemen too. I like that, of course. Overall, it's going to be a long look. I want to go out on a limb and say the Titans are going to win this division. I wanted to, and I looked for reasons to do that. But like you, I'm not sold because it's a rebuilding process. And like you mentioned, you have to learn how to win. That's why, for me, in my money, the Jaguars are the team to win this division.
Well, a lot of great analysis here from Cole Ryan. Really happy to be talking NFL once again with him. Any final thoughts for our listeners today before I let you go for the weekend?
No, man, get ready. Football season's coming. I'm getting fired up for college football and everything you do on the show. I'm excited to hear about it. And, of course, NFL, I can't wait to talk to you every week and entertain our day drinkers on a regular basis.
That's at Cole Ryan and the number 9 on Twitter. Cole, thanks for your time, man. Really appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week.
Have a good weekend, brother.
Great stuff there. Good NFL analysis. We'll try to cover as many of the divisions as we can here in the lead up to the NFL regular season. We'll switch over to the college side of the game here now. Bring in Aaron Saunders of BangTheBook.com, also of NumberFire.com. Aaron, how are you today, man?
Hey, Adam. I'm doing well. Ready for the weekend. And most importantly, T-7 days to the start of the college football season. So I'm pretty excited.
Yes, absolutely. That Cal-Hawaii game out in Sydney, going to be a lot of fun to watch that one. Should be some fireworks in that game as well with the Bear Raid offense, and then we'll have to see how Hawaii wants to kick off the season. But we're here today to talk about the Big 12. And the Big 12 is a very interesting conference this year because I think a lot of people are just taking Oklahoma for granted as the team that clearly stands head and shoulders above everybody else. TCU, significant losses from a personnel side. Baylor, of course, that whole situation that went on there. You know, Texas with Charlie Strong still kind of feels like they're stuck in the mud a little bit. Oklahoma State overachieved for the vast majority of the first part of last season, then just completely ran into a brick wall at the end of the year. So the Big 12 is a really interesting conference, but how would you evaluate it in terms of the other Power 5 conferences?
Well, at least from a handicapping standpoint, I got to tell you, I think I've had more trouble settling on – you know, power rating some of the teams in the Big 12 than any other conference. I think top to bottom, I think there's a fair amount of parity, but I also think that teams like West Virginia and Texas Tech that could dramatically improve the conference, I think are actually going to be worse this year. So I would put the Big 12 at the back of the Power 5 pack in terms of strength of conference. Of course, everyone's talking Oklahoma, and folks really like them going into the season, and so I think that they're a sort of popular choice here to pick the playoffs. But I think on the whole, I think the conference is definitely down.
Well, in your season win total best bets up over at BangTheBook.com, you sent that over to me this morning, got it up right away. In terms of the Big 12 compared to the other 6 conferences that you've done here so far, and of course all of those pieces available at BangTheBook.com, how difficult was this one for you?
Yeah, this one was the most difficult. And I think that sort of comes back to teams like Texas and Kansas State sort of being identified as teams who could make a bit of a leap this year, who could certainly improve upon what they did last year. But I think those things are far less certain than teams in other conferences who are projected to make the leap. I also feel like from a metric standpoint, things are much more muddled. And we can talk more about TCU you know, later on the segment if you like. But they're a great example of a team where the metrics are really down on them, But if you do a deep dive into this team, there's really a lot to like with players coming back from injuries and transfers. And so where I think that there's a lot of differences between the metrics and the magazines and other conferences which presented value, I felt like I struggled much more with this conference and trying to really sort out 2 through 9. I think that there's a lot of question marks, and I think a team like Texas could go, could potentially win the conference, could also be a disaster season, 4-8 range for Charlie Strong. So I think that this was by far the most difficult conference to handicap and really find some value.
Well, we'll start with the team that you're most optimistic on from a season win total standpoint, and that's the Baylor Bears. And there are a lot of fascinating things about Baylor, and I hate to use the word fascinating, because everything that's gone on at Baylor here is absolutely horrible, and I'm surprised more people didn't lose their jobs over this. Art Briles, of course, gone. They bring in Jim Grobe, who's kind of going to be a figurehead to sort of, smooth things out as a guy that can dodge bullets in press conferences and all those types of things. But realistically speaking, both coordinators still here. So I don't think schematically anything's going to change for Baylor. Is that something that you really like about the Bears?
It is, and that was a big part of a big factor in sort of identifying the Bears as my over pick in the conference. I think a lot of people were surprised that Kendall Briles and Phil Bennett were able to hang on to their jobs, but I also think that was, from a handicapping standpoint, a really important development. As you said, I think Grobe is going to come in and try to keep this team together. I think he's going to come in and say a lot of the right things. He's going to deflect a lot of the criticisms or at least absorb those to try to protect this team. I think he's the right guy for the job at the moment. Of course, he has no future with this program beyond this year. But, I obviously can't speak to the report, the Pepper Hamilton report, and how culpable Bennett and Briles were. Obviously, Baylor had determined that they felt comfortable keeping these guys around. And I think on the football field, that's going to be important. I think a lot of the narrative out there, I just dismiss it. I don't think Bennett and Briles are going to forget it, how to coach in the offseason. Are there depth issue? Absolutely. But I think with the key coordinators in place and with, I think, the talent that Baylor has, I think that the pendulum has swung too far in the other direction, and I think that we're over simplifying the Baylor situation. I expect them to be competitive, very competitive in the Big 12 this year.
It's not really a quantifiable thing, so it's not really up either of our alleys, because you and I, like the numbers, like the analytics, like to see tangible proof of things. But when you get a situation like this here with Baylor, you develop that us against the world mentality. Right, wrong, or indifferent, these are kids that are 18 to 23 years old, and maybe they don't understand the grand scheme of everything that's gone on here the way that outsiders are looking at this program. So there's probably a little bit of a rallying cry here of, no one's giving us a chance. Look at all these guys that had committed here and left the program. Look at these guys that transferred out, throw some expletives their way. And it kind of becomes, like I said, that us against the world mentality. And Baylor may very well have that this year. And Jim Grobe may be a guy who's savvy enough to play that up a little bit with this team. And there are concerns on the offensive and defensive lines. There are depth concerns. Absolutely. There's a lot of worries about Baylor. But at the same time, with what's gone on here, as you said, perception's gotten very low on this team, and there's still a ton of talent in place.
Yeah, and I think that, if you look at the two deep where there's going to be less talent, Jim Grobe has a history of getting the most out of guys. The guy won the ACC at Wake Forest. So, I think he's the right guy. I think, per your point in terms of motivation, it's not something I like to talk a lot about. We're sort of forced to come bowl season. But this is an instance where I think that and I just listened to a podcast of a very prominent national outlet yesterday, where the reporter was talking about all this pressure on the Baylor players and the press is going to be around and all of the press attention. And I'm just not ready to say that those kinds of things are going to affect the play on the field. We don't know how Baylor's managing this internally with the players. But where I do think there are some opportunities to discuss motivation is a lot of these kids have been lumped in with the bad apples, and this Baylor program has taken a lot of criticism, and I think rightfully, but there's going to be a lot of proud coaches and proud players on this team. And a guy like Seth Russell what has he done to deserve the criticism? I mean, my guess is he's going to be very motivated to come out and prove the critics wrong. I think they've got a lot of talented guys who have done nothing wrong who can come out and perform. And look, I think Grobe and Kendall Briles and Phil Bennett, I think they're going to play off that. So I do, you know, very little sort of try to, you know, cycle analysis on, as you said, kids that aren't even of drinking age. But this is a situation where I just don't like the national narrative. And I think that there's going to be, you know, create some opportunities in the betting market for Baylor to really outperform the public and the sort of talking head expectations.
Well, we'll stay in the Lone Star State here and flip over to your under pick. That's the Fighting Ryan Goslings, Cliff Kingsbury's Texas Tech Red Raiders. And for Texas Tech, a team I talked about earlier in the week with Brad Powers, you know, again, this is going to be another dynamic, explosive offensive season for Cliff Kingsbury's team. But the problem is you also have to keep the opposition from scoring.
Well, and that's been the real problem the last two seasons for Texas, Texas Tech. And, of course, you know, they brought in a new scheme, and I think, you know, I think that they could potentially be trending in the right direction. There's a great article up on Football Study Hall on SB Nation by Ian Borey. He actually wrote two different articles looking at the new scheme. And really, I think where the problem for Texas Tech lies is in the rush defense. There's a lot of guys who have multiple assignments, and a lot of times when you have young players who aren't really ready for those responsibilities, you can't contain. And when you can't contain, that creates real problems. It creates big plays. So until Texas Tech can demonstrate that they can limit big plays and shut down the rushing game, I'm just not going to believe in this team. I mean, do you believe that they gave up almost 300 yards per game rushing last year? Yes, I think getting the right kind of skill players in on the back end of the defense is going to help. They've obviously increased some turnovers in the defense, but I'm not ready to put my my money on Texas Tech. I also am not totally sold that this offense is going to replicate what they did last year. They were the number one team in terms of efficiency and rushing, but they've got to replace DeAndre Washington. There's a couple key receivers they need to replace as well. So I think the offense, if anything, is more likely to take a step back than a step forward, and I'm not convinced the defense has solved all of its problems.
Well, another thing about that, not only DeAndre Washington, and, you know, I mean, the skill players get all the attention, but they've lost three offensive linemen, and it looks like they're going to go with two redshirt freshmen and a true sophomore. So you're talking about a very young offensive line here as well with Texas Tech. And that's not a good thing when you give up 47 points per game in conference, because if you can't control the line of scrimmage, keep your offense on the field a little bit, that's why your defense gets gassed for 550 yards a game. So for Texas Tech, you know, one problem feeds another. And I do feel like, you know, I think that it's a really good team to focus on from an under standpoint, because you know this as well as I do. Public bettors love teams that put up points. They love teams that are exciting. You want to bet on games that you want to watch. Texas Tech is kind of a must-watch team, because if you like games that are 48 to 45, you're going to get it. And, you know, that can really shield you from a lot of the flaws that a team has. So I think this is a really good team to focus on here at this time of the preparation period.
Yeah, and I think that a Cliff Kingsbury, just because I think, you know, people want to believe in this guy being a big success as a head coach, I mean, I think he gets the benefit of the doubt a lot. You know, I also think that, you know, David Gibbs, given his pedigree, I mean, I think he's getting the benefit of the doubt as well. But, I mean, I think you make a great point in terms of a lot of new pieces on this Texas Tech team. And I think two key games that are going to affect the over-under this year is at Arizona State on September 10th. And then they've got Kansas State on the road on October 8th. I mean, these guys are going to have to get ready if they're going to go over that 6-win total. They're going to have to gel pretty quickly. That's part of the reason that I like the under 6. And by the way, over at Five Dimes, you're getting that at plus 125 under 6. So some value there. Some of the other over-unders that we've talked about, you're paying some juice. Here you're getting a little extra incentive. You can go. You can get the 6.5 at minus 140. But I really think that this team is going to miss a bowl game for the reasons we outlined. I think there's just too many young pieces, and I'm not ready to bet on Cliff Kingsbury quite yet.
Well, we like to talk about a team that's likely to win the championship here, and in the Big 12, it's obviously Oklahoma. And you know, for that reason, I don't want to spend a ton of time on the Sooners. I mean, it's pretty clear that realistically on both sides of the ball, this is probably the most balanced, most consistent team in this division here for this season. Does anything particularly stand out about Oklahoma that you want to mention?
Well, just a couple of quick things, which is, you know, Oklahoma, out of all the teams that I've looked at, the metrics seem to like them, with the exception, I guess, of Alabama more than anyone. I mean, just a couple of things. Football Outsiders, which combines the S&P Plus, Bill Connolly, and FEI with Brian Fairview, gives them at least a 73% chance to win every one of its games, right? And nine games, it's over 80% probability. So, I mean, those are sort of like eye-popping projections. FPI, ESPN's metric, actually likes them even more, gives them at least an 80% chance to win every single game and gives it a 64% chance to win the conference. I mean, those are staggering projections. But I think partly what we've got to pay attention to is Oklahoma is getting the major benefit of the doubt against Ohio State and TCU, two of its most formidable opponents, because those teams lost so much in the offseason. But I think that there's reason to believe that Ohio State and TCU are going to outperform the metrics. So I think Oklahoma maybe isn't a runaway to win the conference and go undefeated as the metrics would project. I think that that's one key thing. From a personnel standpoint, I'm a lot more pessimistic about what Oklahoma is going to do on the defensive side of the ball. They lost four of their biggest playmakers, and on the offensive side, losing Sterling Shepard, I think is going to be very critical. So I see some potential holes or at least some reasons to doubt Oklahoma. Look, paying minus 130 to pick these guys to win the Big 12, there's zero value in that. I just haven't had enough reasons to go out and place some money on a longer shot. I think Oklahoma is the clear favorite, but you can sort of start to pick them apart a little bit, and I think that should give some of our handicappers some pause.
Well, and of course, one of the teams that you would start thinking about if you're not looking at Oklahoma would be TCU. And TCU, you know, they have to replace Trevon Boykin, they have to replace Aaron Green, they have to replace Josh Dotson. Those are three very, very important skill position players on the offensive side of the ball. But you've got Doug Meacham, who's become a quarterback whisperer at the college level. He now gets a new toy in Kenny Hill, Texas A&M transfer. TCU is going to be able to run the football. I mean, they're almost always able to run the football. And then defensively, they return eight starters. And this is a defense that took some steps back last year because they started playing some high-scoring slugfests. But, you know, and Brad Powers alluded to this earlier in the week, do the Horned Frogs maybe go back to what was Gary Patterson's bread and butter because the defense looks like the strength of this team?
Well, I think there's a real possibility of that. I mean, you talked about the returning starters on defense, but also let's not forget that four key guys are coming back off injuries. I mean, TCU on the defensive side of the ball really couldn't have been more unlucky, both from a turnover standpoint and also from an injury standpoint. So I think that the metrics are pretty pessimistic on TCU. The four systems that I analyzed, their highest ranking was 21st, their lowest was 31st. There's a lot of pessimism there. But I think that, you know, part of the problem with the metrics and where you've got to really contextualize this is, at least, you know, Bill Connolly's system and a few of the other ones don't take transfers into account and don't take returning injured players into account. So I think this is a team that's probably going to outperform the metrics expectation. Even Bill Connolly said he doesn't trust his numbers at this point with TCU, and I think it all starts with that defense. I'm also not really ready to say the offense isn't going to perform. I mean, if you look at what they're going to do at wide receiver, I mean, sure, they lost Dotson and some key guys, but they are absolutely loaded with a couple of guys coming back off injury, Selena and Gray. They bring in the LSU transfer, Diarce, in, and then they got two JUCO transfers that are four-star guys. I mean, this is why the returning starter metric is so dangerous, because it doesn't account for a lot of guys coming in. I think TCU is a sneaky pick. I'm not ready to push my money in on them, but I think they could be a very, very dangerous team in this conference.
Well, and of course, too, I mean, when you talk about coaches in the Big 12, you talk about Gary Patterson. I mean, Gary Patterson, in my mind, in a lot of people's mind, is a top five college football head coach. And this is a team. They open with South Dakota State. They've got an interesting home game against Arkansas, who looks like they're down a few pegs. They'll beat Iowa State in homecoming. They go to SMU before playing Oklahoma, so maybe they don't cover the number there, but they should beat the Mustangs in that game. And then, you know, they're at Baylor November 5th. They're at Texas November 25th. But TCU, you know, the mark of a good head coach, and we've talked about this before, is how does a team look from game 1 to game 7 to game 12 or 13? TCU should show improvement throughout the season, and that makes them a very dangerous team in my mind.
Yeah, agreed. And if you've read some of the stuff that Gary Patterson is saying in August camp, I mean, he's really projecting that he's down on this team. You know, he's saying, oh, well, the offense isn't very good and the defense isn't very good, sort of the Lou Holtz approach to all this. And I think you're right. I think what he's saying is the team isn't where it needs to be now. But, I mean, you know, Gary Patterson, if you're going to put your faith in a coach, I mean, he's definitely near the top of the list on a guy year in and year out that exceeds expectation. I mean, you know, obviously TCU has, you know, fertile recruiting ground there. But he's one of the guys who I think you can peg as a coach who's always going to get the most out of his team. You know, I think they're a really – they're maybe the most interesting team of the top 25 teams coming into the year. And, in fact, I think I'm going to end up writing about them over at numberedfire.com next week. How does a team who have lost this many starters, how are they considered by many pundits to be a top 10 team? It's a fascinating team to look at this year.
I want to talk about Texas here quickly, and then we'll throw out another wild card team here. And realistically, I mean, a lot of these teams are wild cards here, and we haven't even mentioned Oklahoma State at all. But Texas, you know, I know a lot of the work that you do is based off of recruiting rankings, and you're looking at 3-, 4-, 5-year recruiting rankings, and it's the Texas Longhorns. I mean, this is a premier blue blood college football program in the best state to recruit high school players in the country. Charlie Strong is a guy that, you know, I talked about this, and I don't want to get into any sort of a racial thing, but I talked about this with the hiring of Charlie Strong, that, you know, he's probably a little bit more relatable to some of those African-American players that Texas is looking to go after. So maybe he's been able to get some of those guys into the program that maybe Mack Brown wouldn't have been able to get. So you would think Texas, with all the talent they have, all the recruiting riches they have, you know, I mean, is this one of the most massive underachievements that you can remember?
I think it is, but I'm willing to give, you know, Charlie Strong a bit of a break. I mean, inherit what he inherited, I think it was quite a mess with Mack Brown. I mean, it takes a while to turn this thing around, and not everyone's a Tom Herman who's going to come in and have spectacular results in year one. What I see is more wins on the recruiting trail. They were extremely young last year on the defensive side of the ball. Of course, this year they're going to be probably starting a true freshman in Bouchel. So I think, you know, I give Charlie Strong the benefit of the doubt. I do think that year three is critical. It's where we saw him succeed in Louisville, where he was able to bring in his guys, get him into the system, get him up to speed. I think that Texas is actually a team to that's primed to surprise some folks. I think that they can make a pretty good, pretty big leap in the conference. If they don't, I think the narrative changes dramatically. Charlie Strong could be out of a job. But for my money, I'd like to see what he does with all of this young talent, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And I think the schedule sets up, if they can knock off a couple of the top-tier teams, man, they could really make a run at a conference crown. And I think that if from a value standpoint, you're talking about TCU and Oklahoma, you know, something in the 9-1 to 10-1 range with Texas, to me, that's more value if Charlie Strong can get these young players performing at a high level more quickly than we expect.
Well, and really the big thing, you know, in terms of looking at conference championship odds is that, you know, you've got the three big games. You've got Baylor, you've got Oklahoma, and you've got TCU. And if you win two of those three, you're probably going to be okay. So, you know, it really does come down to those games. And I'm not saying that you want to, you know, take a position on Texas at 9 or 10-1 and then try to hedge where Oklahoma is going to be a pretty big favorite, or, you know, where Baylor or TCU should be favorites. You know, but that is really the thing, is it comes down to those few key games where, you know, Texas should go out there and beat the Kansas States and West Virginias and Texas Techs of the world. So it is those, you know, standalone contests that really do decide futures in a division like this. One other team to touch on here, Bill Snyder's Kansas State Wildcats. And, you know, I mean, Bill Snyder is a guy that is an against the spread magician. I mean, this is a guy, they're going to knock off somebody that they shouldn't, because they do it every single year. But you think that this is a much improved team?
Oh, I think they are, just based solely on guys they're bringing back from injury. I mean, if you followed this team closely last year, they were down to their four-string quarterback, Huebner, who, by the way, according to Athlon, didn't even start for his high school team. He was a walk-on. They bring back, you know, a couple of guys who were projected to be key players at the quarterback position last year, Jesse Ernst and Alex Delton, who both went down with knee injuries. I think just by virtue of getting those guys back, Kansas State automatically becomes – a better team. This is a team that had a lot of that the efficiency metrics really liked, but they lacked big plays. I think if they can find a couple of guys who can help in the explosiveness categories, and the guy everyone's talking about is Byron Pringle at the wide receiver spot, I think this is a team that can make a pretty big leap. Again, Bill Schneider didn't forget how to coach in 2015. So much of what they were dealing with was bad luck. And, again, I think that this is a team, if you look at them from an over-under win standpoint, 5.5 seems pretty low to me because, as you said, they're going to knock off a team or two that they shouldn't.
We have about 10 seconds left streaming live, so for those that are listening live, please grab the archive version. Kansas State last year, as a home favorite, 0-3 against the number. In the previous 3 years under Bill Snyder, 14-6. So I think that gives you some kind of idea here, you know, of what Kansas State was dealing with last season, because Snyder is really, really good at home in all capacities, whether he's a favorite or a dog. Of course, he was 3-1 as a home dog last year, so yeah, that's very Bill Snyder-esque. But another thing, you talk about guys coming back from injury and how that's not really, calculated in terms of returning production. You get wild card teams like this, like Kansas State. Arizona State is another one that does this a lot. Teams that go get these JUCO transfers, where these are guys that have college football experience, albeit at the FCS level, and you don't always know what you're going to get from them. But given Kansas State's record of success, I mean, Snyder's had, you know, good fortunes with these guys.
Yeah, and I think the secondary is going to be the one unit that's really helped by the transfer, the Schneider legacy of bringing these guys in. They've got a Cal transfer in Dozier. They got another JUCO in DJ Reed. I mean, you're right. He has, because they cannot recruit like a lot of other big Power 5 programs, they've had to get creative, and they had to go out and pluck these guys from either, you know, other schools or from junior colleges. And I expect the team to really be, you know, sort of aided by that this year. I mean, and the other thing that I'll say from a defensive back sort of secondary standpoint is they were just so unlucky in terms of the number of interceptions that they had versus passes defensed. I think that the turnover luck is just going to make the back half of this defense look much better. So, yeah, this is a team that I like. I don't know why. You know, last year I heard so many pundits say, oh, well, you can't count Bill Snyder's team out. And yeah, they don't look very good on paper, but you know they're going to get to a bowl game. Well, I hear a lot less of that this year, and I don't really know why. I think they're going to be a very good team, especially as if you look at the conference as a whole taking a step back. I think Kansas State could get itself to a bowl game and outperform expectations.
This is just pure conjecture for me, but I wonder if, based on how things shook out with Steve Spurrier last year, if people are subconsciously kind of throwing Bill Snyder into that mix, because Bill Snyder is getting older. I mean, the stadium's named after him. This is his second stint as the head coach at Kansas State. You have to wonder how long he'll actually be around. I don't think he'll bail in the middle of the season like Spurrier did, but you kind of have to wonder if maybe that's driving some of the narrative, or I guess lack thereof, here in this instance.
Yeah, and I think there's a natural tendency to say that this guy's going to sort of lose it at some point. I don't mean mentally, but, like, at some point the age catches up with you, right? Like, no one's ever won a race against Father Time. And I think that everyone is sort of expecting Bill Snyder to step down at some point. But until he does, and I agree with you, I don't think he's going to do it midseason. I think he's going to have his team ready to play. And, you know, whether he steps down at the end of this year or it's, you know, further down the road, I don't really see that as having an impact on 2016. I agree with you, public perception-wise, it probably does. But I think that his team's going to be committed to him. I think he's going to coach him up. And I think it's going to be an interesting team to watch this year.
And I think, too, maybe one other, again, unquantifiable thing about Snyder is that with his reputation for JUCO transfers, he gives a lot of guys a chance that other coaches aren't going to. And that probably gains him a lot of favor there in that locker room. That probably has something to do with why these Kansas State teams play so hard. I mean, it's very clear that he cares a lot about his players. And there are a lot of coaches that do. There are a lot of coaches that kind of give you lip service about it. But Bill Snyder seems like one of the most genuine human beings in college football. And I think you have to respect that with this team, is that this team's going to play hard for him every single week, no matter how outclassed they are. And that's why they've been so good against the number.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think he's going to bring in kids that maybe couldn't start at any other Power 5 program, and I think that says something. And I think it also says something for his coaching ability that he can get these guys, to perform at the level they had. I mean, if you think back on some of the seasons Kansas State has had relative to the talent, I mean, it's sort of mind-boggling. And I agree with you. I really like Snyder against the number, especially on the road. And, you know, you look at the week one lines, and I'm peeking ahead, you know, that game at Stanford to start the season, you know, they're going to get more than two touchdowns. And I believe that the number is over two touchdowns right now. That is an awfully juicy line. And I would, especially with some of the changeover, we'll talk Stanford down the road, but given some of the changeover Stanford's dealing with, I think that there's a ton of value in this Bill Snyder team.
Well, Aaron Saunders, contributor to bangthebook.com, also numberfire.com. What's in the pipeline at both of those sites?
Well, you know, so we're, as I mentioned, you know, I'm probably going to be looking at TCU over at numberfire.com this coming week. We've got, and then at bangthebook.com, we've got three more conference previews to get to. We've got the Big Ten next, and then it's on to the Pac-12 and SEC. So that's going to be my focus over the course of the next couple of weeks as we drive to the season. I'll probably also do a little bit of a write-up on this Hawaii Cal game, just because it's a standalone game, and I think people are excited to have college football back. So, hey, we're going to keep up these team previews. We're going to keep up the conference previews right on through the start of the season. And hopefully, sooner rather than later, you and I get to some of these week one lines, because I do think there are going to be many, many that prevent that provide value.
Don't worry, we'll definitely get to them. Aaron Saunders, bangthebook.com, numberfire.com, at Saunders Sports on Twitter. Thanks a lot for your time, man. Really appreciate it. Enjoy the weekend. We'll talk to you again next week.
Same to you, Adam. Looking forward to it, bud.
A lot of great stuff here today from the gridiron. Take a quick look at the weekend for Major League Baseball. I like to take a little bit of a look ahead. Of course, you can get my picks and analysis piece over at bangthebook.com on both Saturday and Sunday. Got a full day planned for Sunday, though, so it may be a little bit shorter of a piece. Of course, also a bunch of day games and all that type of thing. But you know, there are a couple of really big series here to look at. One of them is Miami and Pittsburgh. Miami, of course, without Giancarlo Stanton now. We'll see how long they're able to keep up their pace. But the pitching matchups really don't favor them here this weekend at all. Jose Fernandez, of course, pitched last night, so he won't go in this series. You got Tom Kohler and Gerrit Cole on Friday, David Phelps and Chad Kuhl on Saturday, and then Jose Urena, Ryan Vogelsong on Sunday. None of these pitching matchups are really going to get anybody excited, but I think that in a subtle way on Saturday and Sunday, and of course on a bigger way on Friday, all of them favor Pittsburgh. So this is a pretty interesting spot for Miami. They need to find ways to win these games because they're trying to hold off Pittsburgh in terms of that wild card chase. So the Pirates, I think this is a big opportunity here for them this weekend. I think the Pirates are a team that I'm going to be looking to back here over the next little while because this is a team that has gone on these runs. They know what it takes to make the postseason. Miami, I think they may just be a little bit undermanned here. I think they're a great story. I think Don Mattingly's gotten the most out of this team here in his first year. Barry Bonds doing some good things as hitting coach. But from a pitching standpoint, Miami feels really outmanned to me. So I think that this series really sets up very, very well for Pittsburgh. Of course, they're a juicy favorite on the series price, but that's for a reason. And I think that that's, you know, definitely something that you want to explore. Toronto and Cleveland, interesting matchup tonight. A couple of real inconsistent guys between Francisco Liriano and Trevor Bauer. But I want to look to the weekend. You've got quite a pitching matchup on Saturday night here between Aaron Sanchez and Josh Tomlin. Now, Sanchez is a guy that really dominates right-handed hitters in a big way. He's done some good things with his splits against lefties here this season. The Indians, of course, have killed right-handed pitching throughout the year. They've been a top-five offense for a while in WOBA against righties. So this is a difficult matchup for Sanchez. Also, I want to see how he keeps faring as we get deeper into the season, how he fares with the six-man rotation, where sometimes he may be, you know, going a week between starts. The problem here for Cleveland on Saturday night is that Josh Tomlin's on the mound. Josh Tomlin, a guy I talked about regression coming for him. It's hit in a very substantial way. There could be some fireworks here in this game on Saturday night, or Sanchez could completely dominate. I don't think you see Tomlin dominate this Toronto lineup. Toronto's starting to swing it very well. Troy Tulowitzki's gotten hot now. You know, Jose Bautista was a threat in this lineup, but he wasn't really producing at the level that the Blue Jays had envisioned. So I think that he may be a little bit of addition by subtraction here for Toronto right now. They don't have to put him in a premier position in the lineup. So difficult spot there on Saturday for Josh Tomlin and the Indians, I would think. Hopefully they're able to find a way to pull that out because I am an Indians fan. Of course, I have to root for them. But definitely a game that's on my radar for Saturday night. And then Marcus Stroman and Corey Kluber on Sunday. Corey Kluber is carrying this Indians rotation right now. Danny Salazar, awful start last night. Obviously, I think the elbow is still an issue for him. He was only able to make it through one inning. Carlos Carrasco's had command issues. I already talked about Bauer and Tomlin. Really, really big start for Corey Kluber here. Because for one thing, the Indians could be playing for the series on Sunday. And also because Kluber's facing a very strong Toronto lineup. And I've talked about this before in the past. One of the big problems with Corey Kluber, his sinker yields high exit velocities. Toronto, a very aggressive lineup, some guys that can punish mistakes. It's an interesting draw for Corey Kluber here. It would not surprise me if the Indians lose 2 out of 3 this weekend, including this Sunday game with Kluber on the mound. I really like Marcus Stroman. I think that he has the type of arsenal that can keep the Indians at bay. But again, you know, Kluber's been so good. I mean, he's put himself almost at the forefront of the American League Cy Young discussion. So, interesting game on Sunday for the Indians. Kluber's got to be good. I'm sure I'll touch on that game, even though Kluber and the Indians will probably be a minus 145, minus 150 type favorite in that game coming up here on Sunday. A couple of other things you want to watch for this weekend. Anthony DeSclafani goes on Sunday for Cincinnati. There are some big signs of regression in his statistical profile. Now, the problem here is that for Los Angeles, you've got this Sunday day game, and you know, Sunday day games for West Coast teams, always a little bit tricky. You know, you want to be very careful of situations like that. But DeSclafani is due for some regression. So if that's something that you want to look to play on, you know, then certainly your prerogative. But Kenta Maeda going for the Dodgers in that one. Dodgers will be favored. So if you like DeSclafani, you like what he's been doing, you're going to catch him as a home dog. But getaway day, or actually, they've got a getaway day game on Monday against Cincinnati. And then they go home and take on San Francisco. So Monday could be a little bit of a throwaway game for the Dodgers. We'll take a look at that one in the picks and analysis piece here coming up on Monday. But in terms of other action going on this weekend, you know, there's really not a ton that stands out. You don't have a whole lot of really big series. You've got Boston, Detroit, which is an interesting one because you got Detroit trying to climb into the Central race, Boston there in that American League East, interesting spot there. But, you know, again, not really a whole lot of series that stand out. So we'll see if the teams that are supposed to win beat the teams they're supposed to beat. And then also we got some bad teams meeting Oakland and Chicago, Minnesota, Kansas City, those types of things, Arizona, San Diego. So definitely keep it tuned to bangthebook.com. I'll have my picks analysis piece up throughout the weekend. But just wanted to give you a couple of parting thoughts there for the weekend on the diamond. That'll do it for today. Thanks to Cole Ryan, also Aaron Saunders for joining us. Starting to get back into our rhythm here with guests as we've got the football season rapidly approaching. So make sure you keep it tuned to Bang the Book Radio next week and, of course, throughout the football seasons. But that'll do it. Thank you so much for joining us, everybody. Have a happy, smart, and safe weekend, and I will talk to you again on Monday.